Welcome to Let's Talk America. I'm Alan Keyes here on this much commemorated day for a variety of reasons. It's one of those days that started out in one way and has ended up for those of us who lived through 9/11 in another way, so that the date still carries baggage that has us looking back in order to remember, in order to understand, and in order, of course, to make comparisons between the different meanings that the day carries, because this is the day on which it had been normal to commemorate what is called Armistice Day, the day that World War I came to an end. And that obviously was a day on which people were rejoicing to see the end of what had been one of the worst conflicts up to that point in human history, in terms of the number of troops involved, the number of lives lost. It was a carnage that I think impressed itself in various ways on all of the participants in a way that you think, and everybody said in various ways, and they had meetings, and they tried to gather things in ways that were precursors of what eventually became the unfortunately fated United Nations, which we could talk about at some length. But in any case, it was an effort to make sure that this kind of thing wouldn't happen again. And I think they were sincere about it, even as people at the end of World War II were sincere about it, in terms of not wanting something like that war to occur again in the history of mankind. We did not succeed. And again, at the end of World War II, we saw the same thing. If you've ever read through some of the speeches that were given in various parts of the world about the end at the end of that conflict and in the planting of the seeds of the United Nations, there was a never again kind of attitude. And thankfully, I would say, we haven't seen as yet the end of that hope. Even though I think a lot of people have been looking at what's going on in the Ukraine and what Russia is up to, the possibilities that NATO might get not just involved in supporting the Ukraine with arms, but directly involved in the war, which could be the portentous beginning of another world war, which I'm sure somewhere in their heart of hearts, no sane person wants, but then we have to make allowances for the fact that we're not necessarily, as we know here in the United States for various reasons, we're not living in an era where you can count on the sanity of others. You know, because insanity means that something isn't quite kosher, that somewhere along the way one has turned away from that which leads to a positive, a clean result. And I'm sorry to say that in the midst of the confusion that besets us now, I'm not at all sure we should be surprised at the notion that we are dogged by the sense that in some way or other, a dark cloud of the kind of tragedies that in the course of the 20th century beset mankind a couple of times may not mar the 21st century as well. And obviously, in the course of the 21st century, we have seen from its very beginning, the harbingers of that kind of thing, which is also the other meaning, obviously, of November 11th. For a lot of folks, it mostly means these days remembering the day when we were attacked in such a way as to see two of our most famous buildings destroyed by attackers who had it in mind to try to foreshadow the end of America's leadership in the world. I think we're still struggling with that one, aren't we? We're still struggling with whether or not in the aftermath, because we had obviously a response to that attack that went enough, I think, along the way to reassure us that we had sent a message to the world that you don't want to do that to the United States. It's what actually led to our engagement in Afghanistan, as we went to try to get to the heart of what had been the staging area for bin Laden and his forces in Afghanistan. But we see how that turned out. And we're still, I at least, still find myself pondering why we didn't finish the job in Afghanistan, the way we had a tendency still to do when we faced other portentous situations in the course of the 20th century, came out on top in terms of the conflict, and then tried to shape matters in such a way that what we left behind in the aftermath was not a country that was simply going to be another adversary of the United States, popping up its head again to do us harm. I think that was the reason we became engaged in Afghanistan, as we did in Korea, for much the same reasons, though perhaps with a more stable platform on which to pursue, because obviously we had fought as allies of the South Koreans. And at the end of the war, we were not interested in trying to impose an ending that would allow us to be masters of the whole Korean continent. So that then left us in a kind of limbo, but I think the result in South Korea actually met and exceeded our expectations. It was certainly worthwhile, because I think as we came out of the 20th century, one of those resounding successes for American arms was certainly Korea, but also what South Korea has become in the world. A nation that in many ways, and I remember I've had the occasion to visit South Korea twice, and it struck me that it is one of those places you visit it and you know that we have reason to be thankful for the courage that was shown by America, by its forces in upholding the independence of South Korea, but also in making sure that they would be able to pursue the path that South Korea has successfully pursued to become one of the great contributors to the world's economy, including our own. So I think that we look back on these days and we have to be pride and sorrow have to mingle together, because who wants to wish these terrible wars on any era in human history? But I think by and large, the United States has had a tendency in conducting the conflict and finally being able to overcome the adversaries, not just to look around and say we won and beat people over the head who were our adversaries, but to try to stitch together something that would have an impact that made the world a more stable place, less prone to such conflicts, less prone to see us involved once again. I think we had the same kind of a sense in the aftermath of 9/11. Having risked and given lives in order to pursue those who were responsible for the attack against the United States, we thought that we would follow the same pattern. And I still believe that we were following that pattern, and that one of the most egregiously cowardly things that has occurred in the course of American history was that we betrayed the hopes we had engendered in people in Afghanistan by that premature withdrawal of our commitment to work with them in order to make sure that once again, as had been the case before in the history of our involvement in conflict, we actually were able to help people build a more stable, a more safe, and a result that did not promise warfare, but the successful exploitation of victory in war in order to produce a victory over war making. Well, we didn't succeed in Afghanistan. Or maybe we were succeeding and we lost heart. I think that that's more likely. It was one of those times that signify what we are now, I believe, wrestling with in our own right, wrestling with amongst ourselves. The idea that we were not going to allow the sacrifices of life and treasure that were involved in a terrible war to keep us from remembering that we don't fight wars in order to win them and impose our will on other people. We fight wars in order to end war, in order to discourage war, in order to make sure that we plant a seed that will make war less likely rather than more likely. But in the case of Afghanistan, we retreated. And I have to say, I attribute that retreat to a combination of circumstances, which were mostly influenced, by the way, in my opinion, by the fact that in one way or another, the Democrat Party was involved in a way that then reflected what I think is sadly their lack of commitment to the American ethos. The Democrats being as how as we are seeing now, right here in the United States, I think really committed to the kind of ideas that America represented from its founding, in my opinion. People will argue with that, and they go out there in the Democrat Party and want to stigmatize all the founders as racist slave owners and so forth and so on, which they certainly were not, all of them. And even those who were slave owners were upholding a banner that they knew, not just in their heart of hearts, but in their correspondence and in their conversations with one another, they knew that there was a contradiction between what they did in that beginning of the United States and what they were doing in terms of the enslavement of my ancestors for the sake of gain. That's what led, at the end of the day, to the Civil War. But even there, we had a war that in its aftermath then portended a different path. It was, by the way, a more difficult and onerous path because we were there grappling with our own sins. And the fact that even after a successful war that included a crusade against slavery, though it was not just exclusively devoted to that, I think in Lincoln's mind, the more important aspect, though I believe he was a sincere opponent of the slave regime in the South, I think he would have much rather that it came about without that war. And he was reluctant to get involved with it, as sane people are usually reluctant to get involved in nasty wars. But I think God blessed this country, because at the end of the day, that war represented a sacrifice of life that was not just well-meaning in the sense that some people were committed to the right result, but that also bore fruit in the course of the 20th century, in ways that I know a lot of the people who are so hard on America these days and want to try to act as if nothing good happened in this country, it was evil from the beginning, and so forth and so on. All lies, by the way. But for the seeds of respect for the will of God and his goodness toward humanity that were planted at the time this country was founded, I think we wouldn't have seen results like the Civil War and like its aftermath, which after a bitter conflict that I think actually embittered people on both sides at the sacrifice of life and treasure, the destruction of ways of life that though some people were against them, others had grown used to and thought had value and worth. And yet, despite those differences, this country came back together. We got reconciled between North and South in a way that then allowed us to come together again and again and again in order to play a leadership role in the world. And I think if we hadn't had that reunion of the spirit of America that eventually allowed us in World War I, in World War II, especially to field our armies that were fighting then against those evils that contradicted the assumptions of justice for all, which this country was founded and which by that time was beginning to emerge as an actual fact in terms of what we contributed to as actors in the world. I think these days, a lot of people have a tendency to run it all down as if it doesn't matter, as if it doesn't still have within our grasp a role for the United States that not only brings people together as we certainly have, in a way that represents a nation of nations, people of many peoples, where all of the people in the world practically can see in the United States a reflection, not just of this people or that, but of all people who have in some way or another gravitated toward what we are building still here in the United States of America. And they want to be part of it, because I think a lot of folks understand that when we look at it in terms of the end we should have in view, the United States is the promise that the whole human race will discover the common ground of our humanity and build a future for the whole earth that reflects that sense of our community. A sense of community that I think was implied in the very beginning of this country's life, when they proclaimed that the nation was born under the aegis of God's endowment of all humanity, on a premise of justice that reflected the responsibility of all who go by the name of human beings, to live in such a way as we requite the goodness of God in the way that we respect and deal with one another, so that we walk a walk that is in fact consistent with His will, that we should be a country that promises and delivers liberty and justice for all who are willing to walk within the boundaries of God's good will. I think we have done it repeatedly, and I hope that we are still striving to do it in that very same spirit, not just amongst ourselves, but for the whole world, because by now, as I think we are more and more realizing, we are able, without, I think, equivocation, to present ourselves as a nation of nations, to present ourselves as a people who already is engaged in the business of building that future for all humanity, which Soros and his crowd and other people like this, they like to pretend they're inventing something. But we have something here in America that doesn't have to be invented, because it already is moving along the path that these people pretend to have an interest in, though the interest they seem to have is more about aggrandizing their own power and totalitarian control than it is about fulfilling the destiny of humanity under the aegis of God's will, in such a way that the word liberty does not lose its meaning, but in fact redounds not just to the benefit, but the credit of all human beings. I think that has been the hope, and we've reflected that hope in America, in the way we conducted ourselves in the world wars, even in the way we are conducting ourselves now, though I think it's quite clear that in the present circumstances of the country, there's less of a commitment to what I am talking about in terms of that overall sense of the significance of this nation for humanity as a whole. A lot of people seem to think that it's in their best interest to try to get people to look away from that. Don't try to pretend that there's any special destiny for the United States. We've been an awful country. There was slavery in America, and there was poverty in America, and there was this, and there was that, and there was, oh, things that, of course, were not found anywhere else in the world, and where greater progress was made somewhere else than you ever saw in the United States. That's a lie, by the way. Why do we forget that? In point of fact, I think it would be fair to say that we're in the running for being a nation that, having drawn people of every race, color, and creed and kind to the United States, we are more successfully knitting them together into a nation that actually reflects the birthright of all humanity than any nation that existed before us in the history of the world. And to do it on the scale that we have been trying to do it, and with the success that we have actually achieved in doing it, ought to make us reflect on the nature of our commitment, so that in spite of the difficulties, we hold on to that dream. Because it's not just a dream in America. It's a realized way of life, which we can make better and better if we're willing to commit ourselves to the cause. And that's what our struggle is still about, I fear, committing ourselves to that cause. And sadly, some of the ideologies that have developed and did develop in the course of the late 19th, early 20th century were, I think, entirely distracting from that goal that is the goal of our existence as a nation. There is a sense that I have always gotten, by the way, from Marxism and all these people. They don't believe that you can build without destroying, and that includes the human race. And so you have to burn it down before you can build it up. That's not the spirit of the United States. The United States was a nation that derived, I think, its mission from a building spirit. So some would want to say, nay, that's not true. I think when you look back on the people as the folks who actually populated the continent and built the farms and raised the children and so forth and so on, these were people who were dedicated to the task of building something that would be of worth, and at the end of the day, not just to themselves, but to their posterity. That juxtaposition of those who are here and those who are not here yet, and the fact that those who are laboring here labor in a vineyard whose fruits will at the end of the day be enjoyed by generation after generation of people to come. We haven't given that up, and I'm sure glad that we haven't. I become even more glad of it every day when I contemplate the tendencies that exist in this country to see us walking away from this commitment to our destiny as it is upheld before the whole human race. I remember that in particular on 9/11, right? It was a day when we were attacked, but when in the course of that attack, I think we realized that in some ways, an attack on America is an attack on people everywhere. An attack on America is an attack on people of every race, color, creed, and kind, in which the sense of loss probably touched somebody in nations all around the world. Because people have come to America seeking a better destiny for themselves, and in the process, they have created a better destiny for the nation as a whole. And that's not wasted. It's not wasted on people. It's why, by the way, though we sometimes obscure it and forget it, why are we having such problems with our border? We're having such problems with our border because people want to come. And you can say if you like, they just want to come for money and so forth. No, they don't. I think people mostly still seek dignity when they are coming to America, the dignity of making one's own way in a way that then bears fruit in a positive sense for children and family, for township and country. And I think that spirit is still the spirit in which people coming to America can fulfill a dream that's not just for themselves. It's a dream that includes being part of the realization of something that is the hope and gives hope to all humanity. This is the kind of thinking I always do, I think, as we commemorate 9/11, not just in terms that encompass the attack that was waged and the losses that we suffered in this country and in that unexpected, in many ways, blow against us, but also the original meaning. Starting out with Armistice Day, when it signified the end of World War I, that there was a spirit involved that acknowledged and sought to fulfill the destiny of this nation of nations for the whole of humanity. I think that this is a day when we not only remember the losses and the attacks, we remember the sacrifices, we remember the courage, and we remember the dedication, not just to ourselves, but to all humanity, that is in fact involved in this day, no matter which aspect of it we are remembering on behalf of the good people of the United States. That still finds a way to creep into some, at least, of the discourse and speeches of our presidents and other people who are supposed to be our representatives in the Senate and in the Congress and in the different stages of our political and governmental life. But I hope it really resonates with the heart of this people, because I think at the end of the day, it reflects what we owe to Almighty God for His good graces in letting us become a nation that has not yet disappointed the hopes of all mankind, which are brought into focus right here. We'll be back right after this.
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. we offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater. And our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.
Ready? Shout out to Brighteon. Thank you so much for having us on. It's been an amazing experience. You guys are always posting amazing things. And thank you, Mike Adams. It's been an amazing
experience.
Thank you.
Love you, Mike.
Peace. Hello, I'm Dr. Hochsi. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America. And today I've been talking about the profound significance of this day, 9/11. And not only as the day that saw the attacks against America and the aftermath of those attacks that I think we're all well aware of, continuing all the way through the whole involvement in Afghanistan and so forth and so on, but also the history behind it. That goes back to Armistice Day and America's involvement in World War I. That portended, of course, our involvement in the whole of the 20th century, in which we rose to become the leading nation on Earth, a title that I think we're still precariously holding on to, much to the chagrin of the Chinese communists, but which we have not yet relinquished, not for the lack of trying on the part of others. But I think one of the reasons why, however tenuous it may seem from moment to moment, that leadership persists, is because of the uniqueness that I was talking about. Where is there another country that in this self-conscious way represents a human hope, a human destiny, a human challenge that we would be able to forge of all the nations and peoples of the world one common humanity grounded in a sense of justice and right that we all share, in a way that reflects our willingness to acknowledge that we are not the most important beings in the universe, but we can try to fulfill the goodwill represented in our very existence as human beings on this planet. I think there are still a lot of Americans who are committed to that. I think there are people all around the world who are now committed to it. It's one of those things that I think, boy, is my sense that we shouldn't give in, even when we're not doing all that well. And I think that we have to be honest. I have to be honest, at least, that we're not doing all that well right now in the United States. Why? Because of the terribly poor leadership that's being provided by the party that kind of usurped the name that was generally applied to America and still is, in a way that makes you question whether it should ever have been turned into a partisan emblem. And that's the Democrats conveying that sense of the involvement of all the demos, of all the people. And that's our promise. It's what I know to be the actual reality of what we are supposed to become. That's why I have not been willing to give the word democracy up to the party that now sashays around like it owns it, while betraying, I think, every bit of the meaning of its substance. And it's why we should be rightly disappointed in the really poor performance of Joe Biden and his colleagues, reflecting, I think, what I believe to be the more studiously poor performance of Obama, who is still, according to many of the things that I read, back there pulling the strings against a nation that I'm more and more convinced. I was convinced of this by the impressions I formed, because you all know I did run against him in Illinois, at the invitation, by the way, of Republicans there who were having a problem, I guess, finding somebody to run against him after their primaries had ended, but their candidate had been withdrawn. I do count it one of those decisions that I question most in my life, whether I should ever have gone into Illinois. It was not the state I lived in, and so forth and so on. But I felt like it was, once you got to know a little bit about Barack Obama, I felt it was kind of a duty to perform in order to bear witness against what he represents. And he came across at first, right, when he gave that speech at the Democrat convention and so forth and so on, as somebody who was actually trying to act as if he had some love in his heart for this country. But the thing that impressed me most about his background, his ideological commitments and so forth, I think that he has a deep-seated hatred of the United States. That somewhere that sense of the ideological conclusions that he drew was a sense that led him to reject what was celebrated as the destiny of America, which I have been trying to talk about. I don't think he sees humanity in those terms. He professes to be, and did profess to be in his life all along, a Marxist, Leninist, communist style person. I think he still is. And I guess I reject him for the very reason I rejected that ideology. An ideology that constantly promises something while neglecting the real meaning of that promise. Because if you're going to promise something for all human beings, for all, then you have to take seriously what it means to talk about humanity. You never degrade it. You never act as if you're going to put the interest of this or that ideological fervor above the need to respect the human hope, to respect the human achievements, to respect the human potential that you are, in fact, always serving if you're doing right. See, I don't think that's true of these people. And why is it not true? Because they follow an ideology that's obsessed with power. And power is not the meaning of real achievement for humanity. Somewhere in our heart of hearts, I think we human beings get the sense that whatever we may think of our own power, even those who achieved the pinnacles of human power, they were always deluding themselves, weren't they? Because their power ends up being no power at all against the realities of their very individual human existence. All that power that they pretend they wield and have, it ends up in the dust, along with every other human person whose remains are mingled with that dust. I think it's good for us to reflect on that. A lot to realize that whatever it is we think we are achieving, it ends up in the dust in one sense. And therefore, we need to look for some other measure of the worth of our achievement than the power that allowed us to fancy that we were getting something done. because whether we were getting it done or not getting it done, the eternal life is still beyond us, except as the hope offered if we acknowledge the being of God by the good will of God who created us in the first place. I think there is still a promise of that eternity, but it's not a promise that's going to be produced by our power and the wisdom of Karl Marx and Lenin and Engels and Stalin, all these self-deluding individuals. No, because the power of God transcends all of that. It is responsible for what is both viable and good in the experience of our humanity. But our obsession with ourselves and our power has, from the very beginning, if the Bible be true, been the pitfall, that we shall be as God is by our own doing. And in that insistence, we actually undo the best in ourselves in order to prefer the worst and the outcomes that go along with it. It's a sad thing, but it's a temptation that by and large, I think America has, in various ways, successfully resisted until now. I think allowing the triumph of these, I guess we call them left-wing, this is and that's and ideologies and all of this, all their false promises, every single one of them, focused on the satisfactions that don't last, that are of the moment, that are gratifying because we are able to applaud and exalt and pleasure ourselves in them, knowing somewhere in the back of our own minds that they couldn't have that much significance because it's all going to end up in the ground with our material remains along with it. That sense that we shall somehow engross ourselves in materialism and that's going to be what raises humanity above the dust. No, it doesn't. Because we are consigned to the dust, whether we like it or not. And it has ever been the case that nothing changes the fact that those remains don't look very savory after a while when they've been there. They don't reek of all of the hubris and pride in our achievements, well, whatever they might be. And they don't reek of our hopes for all humanity. Not when we have achieved what we are calling those hopes, by inflicting the death that we must all suffer in a way that prematurely curtails the ability of others to explore the real significance of life, which goes beyond these material and transient things, in order to encompass what we taste, what we feel, what we somehow know to be truer than all of that, in the ways in which we comport ourselves that suggest that there is a hope, that there is a sense of the real meaning of what we do that transcends the matter that will lie in the dust, that transcends the power that we will no longer in any way represent in the aftermath of this life. Because those things are more moral than they are material. They have to do more with the understanding of the good that we can do in a way that then respects the human spirit and informs it over the course of time in a way that will persist and that has persisted down through the ages, whether it be through the agency of someone like Jesus Christ representing it in its godly form, or the agency of human beings who leave behind a memory that has in it those traces of commitment to the spiritual and moral truth of our existence, which they don't let go of, reaping fruits that have a material significance, but that at the end of the day are more about inspiring the spirit and the hope of our humanity so that we embrace the reality of those things that can be achieved by us because we walk a path that will outlive our dust until God summons the spiritual and moral significance of that which we have done and allows us in some way to contemplate the real meaning of our lives if we have been willing to dedicate ourselves more to what serves those outcomes consistent with the goodwill of God than those which do not. I think we are, as a nation right now, going through things where people are tempting us to believe that we ought to move aside that which has us contemplating eternity as the ultimate arbiter of the success of our humanity, and instead contemplates the gratifications of the moment and the hour and the pleasures that we can conceive of in our own little way. Even the commitment that used to exemplify our understanding of what we do is somehow for the sake of what we won't be here to witness and to do. That commitment which led people to get married and to have children and to take away from that whole experience some sense that we have made a contribution that is meant to last, to outlast this flesh, because our children will outlast our flesh, but also to enkindle and preserve our hopes and our real achievements, which are to be measured in the spiritual and moral terms known best to God and never forgotten by Him, whatever distractions we may be subject to in this time and place. I think as a nation, we're now being tempted by these things in a way that goes beyond anything known before, because we have kind of turned our back on the fundamental premises of the nation's existence, which had us looking to God, and in looking to God, looking to that which is, in that sense that I'm speaking of, permanent, allowing us to participate in the shaping and in results that then will truly live beyond us, but not beyond Him, beyond our material selves, but not beyond the touch of God, which I think we are able to wield in some sense every time we act in His way. We do what He requires us to do. One of the most important things, in my opinion, that our founders ever did was when they started this nation by appealing to the authority of God and His endowment of rights. But we think of those rights as freedoms all the time. And I try to remind people continually that the use of the word right in the Declaration is not about our freedom. It's about our willingness to discipline ourselves in order to follow the understanding of right that marks out the path of justice and right that He means us to pursue toward others as well as toward ourselves. That's the permanent things that we can influence, the permanent things that we can lift up and affirm and perpetuate in the course of our lives. And that in many ways, I think, though not always self-consciously, America has tried to serve, remembering that the first commitment we make is to do right according to God, to understand our righteousness in terms of the provision of God, the endowment of God, and ultimately the will of God for right and justice, which is not of our making, but of His own. A vision of what it is to be that we can only partly understand, but which we can take a full part in if we are willing to walk a walk that corresponds to His provisions. Every time I find myself reflecting on the Declaration of Independence, I find myself confronting the fact that the Declaration of Independence is not about our independence in the sense of being free to do whatever we want to do. It's about the fact that our destiny is not dependent on the material accidents of this world, but rather on a commitment to doing that which reflects the will of God, which is not dependent on those material aspects, even though that will informs them. It means we can do things that last, not because we last, but because the lasting God, the everlasting God, approving of those things, also orders them in such a way that their impact, though it may be lost on us in the dust, will not be lost on the reality of the universe that corresponds to his will. And when you read through, as I hope people do every now and again, I find myself periodically always returning to it. As I think, if I forget to ponder the meaning of the words of the Declaration of Independence, I'm going to forget myself at some point. I'm going to forget things that were absolutely vital to the components that I represent in the world, including those things that I guess are kind of bitter fruit. The memory of slavery, the encounter with all that it involved in the way of degradations and the marring of human hope. And yet in a context that then made it more important than ever that one should find the hope and pursue it, because that hope has an origin that transcends human power in such a way that whatever the evil that men do amongst themselves, there is still a good that does not partake of it, which can be reflected in our lives and in our destiny and ultimately in our hope, not just for ourselves, but for the whole of humanity. I think that hope is what I was talking about in the first part of this program today. Because I think the hope of America is a hope for all humanity. When we remember that, we do amazing things. When we forget it, we languish in what end up being the hopeless travails of our passions and our desires and our lust and our greed in order to achieve things that, while they do not last, can leave a lasting bitter taste in that core of our humanity that reflects the evil that men do. America was not committed to that evil. And I think that's a good thing. We have been a nation that from the beginning had in our sights to do right according to the will of God. And if we are still committed in that way, I think for all our ups and downs, we'll end up doing good rather than evil. That's not what a lot of people say now. One of the reasons that puts me off of the left and so forth, why did they spend all their time excoriating people in the past who were in many respects more virtuous than they are today for the fact that they were not virtuous enough to end slavery. They were not virtuous enough to lift people out of poverty. They were not virtuous enough, etc. And then I look around me. The first thing all of these Democrat purveyors of hope for everybody and lifting everybody up and waging war on poverty and so forth and so on. They're not happy until they're living in mansions that cost millions of dollars and that have proven their worth. They prove their worth in that way because somewhere in their heart of hearts, they know that their empty formulas for ideology do not give them worth in the actual achievements that they have produced in the world. They represent a kind of hopelessness, and then they build up all this other junk to try to make up for the fact that they achieved nothing in their lives, but to hold out false hope because it was not governed by the hope of God reflected in the first things that he did in the creation of humanity that give us the only real and lasting hope there is in the universe, because it is the hope that is there in the goodwill of God. If we are only willing to walk the walk that corresponds to that will. I wish there were more. There are a lot of people, and I encounter them all the time, and I have them on the program. It's one of the reasons why I do it, to be able to listen to the conversation of people who are listening to the conversation of God, who are engaged in that conversation in a way that is reflected in the tenor of their lives, so that their hope is not for mansions and wealth and so forth, even when they achieve it. Their hope is to be according to that goodwill of God, so that they can know that they have participated in a way that walks down the paths that will not disappear, because they are the paths of God's making that will extend and do extend through all eternity, in order to inform the hopes of those who are and those who are not yet, because they have not emerged in the panoply of God's good will. I think that there's a part of us as Americans that knows that this is our true vocation, that is looking always beyond all this material junk and all of the things that people say are the desirable things in life, in order to achieve something that ties us, that involves us with the only things that last. For there is nothing eternal that is not of God. He is the eternal being. He is therefore the one who, in opening the path, opens the way to the experience of that eternity, brought about so that we can understand its truth as we experience his good will. I think all the best things that Americans have ever done, and I mean by Americans the people from every walk of life and way in our humanity, all the best things have come about, I believe, as a result of allowing oneself to be a correspondent in that good will of God. And I pray every day that more Americans will accept and live according to the hope that is engendered. When you even start to conceive of that path, and then take the first steps which allow you to join others as they walk into the future he intends for us. Ponder that. We'll be back.